This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, I'm Ezra Zayed.
And I am Umar Pagan and PK Pagan.
And this evening we're going to be talking about developing Malaysian literature talents. The recently set up KL Writers Workshop, KLWW, is a literature development agency that seeks to explore the artistic and social power of creative writing. Here in the studio to tell us more about the workshop and how they plan to further develop the Malaysian literary scene are Bernice Chorley, founder and director of KL Writers Workshop, as well as scriptwriter Rafida Abdullah. Welcome to the studio, guys.
Thank you.
And of course, Rafida, you just made it into the studio, so well done to you.
Thank you.
So tell us, you know, what are some of your just general observations about the writing and the literary scene in the country? Of course, we just had the recently concluded Kuala Lumpur Festival, which is all really good. Apparently, it went well, Uma? It went well?
I think so, yeah.
But what is the state of writing in the country right now?
I think it's a very exciting time to be a writer in Malaysia. I think it is the best time to be a writer in Malaysia right now. Publishing is at an all-time high. People are reading, books are selling. You know, if someone like Amir Muhammad can sell 25,000 copies of books, and Legend Press and it's selling 40,000 copies of a particular writer, I mean, it's incredible. So I think audiences are becoming very discerning. We want to read local fiction. We want to read things that are written in different ways. I think language has to evolve. It is evolving. And I think it's a very exciting time for Malaysian writing.
Besides general literature, Rafida, I mean, like, what's it like in the television world? What's it like in the movie world with regards to scripts? Because obviously, a lot of the things we see, because studios and producers seem to commission the same sort of things. So are writers given a chance to explore their ability?
Right. As far as writing for screen is concerned, it is, again, like Bernie says, an exciting time because... yes, we do still have the studio set up where you pitch a script and then they will commission you to write it and then the studio goes on to make it. You still have that. But at the same time, you have a lot of young people going on to create their own content. And they're not waiting for people to commission them. They're putting all this stuff online and they're also spreading it via social media. So we have a lot of young people creating new stuff which becomes viral. And sometimes these things are more watched, more viewed than the things that end up on the big screen. So... in that sense,
10,000 hits on YouTube and you're more viewed than some of the things that, you know, end up on the big screen.
Isn't it sad?
Right?
Yeah. So in that sense, there's I would say it's disjointed.
Okay.
The industry as a profession and what's going on ground, the two are very disjointed at the moment, but they're trying to find a common ground where you can make money out of creating your own content that doesn't... that doesn't kowtow to other people's expectations.
Right.
So there's that.
Okay. And Bernice, we're talking about the KL Writers Workshop. And I think one of the more interesting things about these workshops is when it comes to writing per se, it needs to be in that format. It's not something you can learn on YouTube. It's not something that you can listen to a podcast to and say, well, I'll improve my writing that way. I mean, writing workshops are so important to the development of writers. And a lot of writers generally, it's a DIY format for them. They just sort of learn and read and expose themselves in their own little worlds. But being exposed to a workshop format is so crucial to these writers.
Well, I think it's not impossible to learn on your own. I think it's you know, if you're wanting to be a poet and then you can just pick up a book and learn the rules. I really, because I've been teaching and you know, I've worked in academia for so long, I really am a firm believer of knowing the rules before you break them. It's also what I'm trying to do is to create a multi-genre content development agency. It's not just literary, it's content. We want to create good content. So good scripts, good poetry, good plays. You know, we're looking at graphic novel, we're looking at children's fiction, we're looking at editing classes. So it's really, you know, looking at the literary arts as a holistic, from a holistic point of view. And I think because we do have people in the industry, Rafida has been a screenwriter for, you know, over 15 years. You know, we've had people who have worked for a very, very long time, people who can teach. So this is what we're sourcing for people who can teach, who have worked as practitioners in the industry for a very long time and who are able to share their knowledge face-to-face in a very intimate situation where you learn from people who have done it. You learn from the best.
Folks, we're going to give you more details about the KL Writers Workshop right after this. It's BFM 89.9. It's the evening edition. You're with Uma and Ezra. And this evening, we're speaking about the KL Writers Workshop. In the studio with us is Bernice Charlie, founder, director of the KL Writers Workshop, as well as Rafida Abdullah, who's a script writer. For folks who want to know more, you can head over to klwritersworkshop.com. Bernice, so it kicked off this past weekend. Am I right about that?
That's right.
So what can people sort of look forward to when they're looking at these workshops? So what's available for them? Who are you looking to engage?
Anybody who really wants to write. I mean, someone who's been sort of writing in the closet for the last few years. I think the important thing is that writing is a craft and it's a process. And that's what we want to instill, that it takes time to cultivate an idea. It takes time, you know, for example, to build character, to build plot. And then you have to go back and revise. So I think it's really focused on the craft of writing. On revision, on editing, that, you know, you can't create something in a short period of time. It takes time. And for the 10-week courses, this is what we want to do. We want to emphasize that it's, you know, we're starting from scratch, from basics, right. From the very basics.
Oh, you mean you can't just start a blog and start writing like that, lah?
I think you've actually heard from film producers or, you know, studio folks who say, well, what's the point of spending so much time writing? Just, you know, knock it out in a month and start shooting the month after.
David Teo. Sorry. No, but you know what's interesting is, Rafida, at the Kuala Lumpur Festival, we had a session where we spoke to the DJ of Finas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the questions that came up with where do we fall short, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a unanimous consensus in this hall of 250 mm-hmm. people that it was writing.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, our movies are quite sound mm-hmm. when it comes to special effects, when it comes to production values and cinematography and all that stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. we know that. You know, we're good at those technical skills. But somehow storytelling, plot, character development, writing, it still seems to fall short. Is that a statement you agree with?
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. And the problem is, like Bernice says, people don't want to spend time on stories. They don't want to, you know.
Why not?
Because it does. While you are writing, no money is being made. That is the long and short of it.
That's such a painful truth you just spoke there. That it's true,
well,
though.
It's
because
it's
really true.
Yeah. So, for example, Peter Jackson makes his movies in what? One movie in 10 years? Something like that?
Yeah,
while he is doing that, no money is being made. But his producers believe enough in him to give him that space because they know that at the end of the 10 years, they will make back all that money and more.
True. I was just going to say, Rafila, that's a bad example because at the end of the 10 years, he makes $3
billion. That's right.
And so, where does the shortfall happen in the sense that do we not have enough support structures to help train these individuals? Do we not have enough open-minded producers and studio executives who go, actually, you know what? This movie would actually sell a lot better if you put some time into the writing. I mean, where's that shortfall?
Yes, that is part of the problem. People don't want to spend time on a story because they don't think that it's that hard. They really don't think that it's that difficult to make something up, to make all these characters up. It can't be that difficult. And it can't be that difficult to sell these stories either. But you see, if you look at our movie industry and you compare it to our neighbours, for example, Thai movies, they're able to export their stories to Malaysia. Indonesia as well is able to export their stories to Malaysia. But Malaysian stories don't sell abroad because our stories are not... Our stories rarely have deeply resonating meaning.
Mm.
They tend to be rather shallow. And the movies that try very hard to have meaning usually sacrifice entertainment.
Everything else. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So, Bernice, does the same apply? Do you find the same applies to Malaysian literature? This idea that somehow we think it's easy. We think we can just keep churning it out. We think we're good writers, so we just keep writing.
That's a very difficult question. Well, you know, it is a craft. It is a process, and this
I'll narrow the field. Malaysian literature in English.
In English,
yeah.
Okay. Yes, I think that there is a lot of potential out there. I think there is a tremendous potential. And, you know, thanks to the writers who've sort of made it abroad. I mean, Tash and Twining and Preeta and all that.
Yeah.
But again, it's it's a difficult process. It's painful. Writing a novel is a very painful process, and I can attest to this because I've just, you know, I've written, you know, the memoir was very painful, but there was nothing harder than the novel, and it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, really, apart from childbirth, I think. So it is, like Rafida said, you know, it's a difficult process because you have to constantly revise the work. You have to ask yourself, would this character do this? You know, motivation is very important in character. You have to have a plot. Does it make sense? Is it realistic enough? I mean, if you set a book on an alien planet or in a spaceship, it has to be believable. So that's the believability of a story. I think we have stories. We have to learn how to tell them properly, effectively.
Yeah,
so storytelling, craft, it's something you have to learn. It really is.
Yeah, stories and storytelling are two completely different things, and people seldom appreciate this. Mm. They think that they have a story to tell, so just tell it.
We have a rich oral history, and we're not making that leap between the oral tradition and a written tradition.
Yeah, well, you know, having spent some time in the Malaysian publishing industry, I always get sort of these manuscripts.
Oh, I mean, well, some time ago. Set eye publications.
And so what would happen is that, you know, there'll be sort of a lot of upcoming writers, mm-hmm. and they say, hey, you know, and this is the worst thing because you get a lot of manuscripts.
Right.
And these are manuscripts, you can tell within the first few pages that it's not gone beyond the first draft. It's not gone through revisions. It's not. And I'm just wondering whether that concept of constantly revising and editing your work and getting constructive feedback, is it something that's alien, or is it something that's not available to people or to be exposed to that environment?
I think it's both. I think, you know, the publishing industry, we don't have good editors. We don't have enough good editors in this country. And it's in the West, you know, you before you even send anything to an agent, it's revised several times.
Absolutely.
Before it's even, you know, had to get an editor to look at it, six drafts at least, then you send it to a publisher. Here it's the other way around because we want things fast. You know, we want to churn it out. We want to, you know, it's sort of, you know, a publisher used the word disposable fiction, and I'm sorry to be able to use that. But at the same time, this is what people want. We want it fast. We want it quick. We want to be able to read something, a book in half a day or in a couple of hours. There's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
We're on the other end of the extreme, right?
Yes.
I mean, when you speak to a lot of literary fiction authors, for example, I mean, they're on the spoiled end of the extreme. Oh, mm-hmm. 2 years for me to write a book? Are you crazy? I mean, how is that possible? But we seem to be the 1 month, churn it out.
Yeah.
Next week, you've got to have a launch, right?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, you know, like she said, when you're writing, you don't make money. You don't make money. I mean, Donna Tartt, you know, spent 10 years writing each of her novels. I mean, it's impossible for a writer to sustain that kind of lifestyle in Malaysia. This is why we also want to be able to enable writers like ourselves to be able to earn a living. Mm. You know, because people expect us, yes, to teach, come and do a workshop, you know, we won't be able to pay you very much, if anything at all. So it's also like, you know, you have to respect us. Give us, pay us what we're due, because we've got the experience. So.
And it's the same with editors, right? Editors,
absolutely.
We've got very few good ones, and even those don't get paid very well at all.
And I think, you know, if you want something to be edited, you have to pay people. You just, you know, same with proofreaders, you just have to pay people. And if you want the industry to thrive, you've got to support it. We have to support it.
And Rafida, in the world of television and film, is that issue something that's quite
is
common as well?
Is this finance, is it?
I mean, who comes in with the editing sort of process? Is it somebody related to the studio? Is it somebody who's like, well, we can anticipate that the government might not be comfortable with this part? Or how does that work?
Okay, well, first of all, there is no such job as a script editor in Malaysia. There is no such person.
Or you haven't met that person yet?
Oh, I've
really?
Done the job several times.
Right.
But that's in the process of, say, for example, I'm the head writer for a TV series. So I would do that job as well as the writing job. But someone specifically being just a script editor, no, I've not met any such person. And usually when a script is sent in, the producer will look it over, the director will look it over, the sponsors might also look it over and give their input. The stations will also give their input. So sometimes they might not like something, they don't think it's slapstick enough, or they feel that, this is a great place to put in some product placement, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
The content gurus that they are.
So it's very challenging. It's a very challenging environment in which to work because you have all these people giving in their input, but they're not helping to mold the story. they everyone's looking at it.
They're looking at their own interests.
Yes, they're looking at their own interests. That is one problem. The other problem is that stories that are not that good can also make a lot of money. So,
But I don't have a problem with that, as long as the execution, a Jurassic World comes to mind, right?
Oh, yeah. There we go.
No, I mean, the script is awful. The story isn't great. The story is a rehash of the last three movies. But the execution is so superb that it's made $1 billion faster than any movie in history.
I can excuse Jurassic World, but I cannot excuse Transformers.
Okay, that's a good point. Fair enough.
But anyway, when producers see that, what they think is, so why do I want to spend time crafting a story when this guy who writes a script in 3 days can make $3 million? And you, spending 3 months on a script, cannot even make $1.5 million. I should go with this guy.
And so I guess there's no room to discuss the story aspect of it, because it all comes down to numbers.
It comes down to this KPI spreadsheet type thing.
Yes, it does come down to ringgit and cents. When we argue our case, we don't have ringgit and cents to back it up.
Bernie, so you've had, I guess this past weekend, some of the workshops taking place. So what sort of variety are we looking at in terms of what's available for people to engage in? I mean, everything from books to film to poetry to everything, I guess.
The workshop on the weekend was called You Can't Make This Stuff Up, The Art and Craft of Journalism and Storytelling. This was taught by Janet Steele, and it was very, very successful. We had a lovely bunch of women and one man. it was very good. So this weekend, Rafida and I are starting our courses. I'm going to be teaching a course called Finding the Author's Voice, which looks at three specific genres, so creative nonfiction, poetry, and fiction, short fiction. Rafida will be starting a course called Write That Script.
All right. We'll find out more about both of these workshops after this. Some music for you first. I Follow Rivers by Lick Lee right here on BFM 89.9. Addition in the studio with us is Bernice Charlie, founder and director of KL Writers Workshop, as well as Rafida Abdullah, who's a scriptwriter. We're speaking about the KL Writers Workshop. And for more information, you can head over to klwritersworkshop.com. And we were speaking earlier about how, I mean, there are interesting workshops happening every other weekend or every weekend. And Rafida, you have a particular interesting workshop coming up. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I do. My workshop starts this Saturday and will go on weekly for 10 weeks. And it's called Write That Script. It's a script writing workshop. Specifically, it's script writing for film. So during the workshop, I'll be discussing things such as character building, plotting, writing dialogue, writing scenes, etc., etc. And at the end of the workshop, the students are supposed to have finished about 25 to 30 pages of their script.
Well, that's quite a bit. And the range of, I guess, students in which you usually encounter, I mean, how... are they at the intermediate level? Are they at sort of the beginner's level? I mean, I'm sure there's such a variety of students who are interested in this type of writing.
This is my first time teaching script writing. Previously, I taught script analysis, but that's for some undergraduate students at Sunway University. So this is my first time teaching a workshop that's open to the public, and Bernice will brief me later on the demographics of my students.
Right, but where do you start? So I'm assuming you're just going to start at the utmost basic level.
Yes, at the utmost basic level, which is, what is a script?
Right,
fantastic.
Don't take it lightly, because a lot of people don't know what it is, what it looks like, what it's supposed to do. So their idea of what a script is, they don't think that it's that different from a play, for instance, or a short story or a novel. The story's there, the characters are there, the words are there for the actors to say. So that's basically what they have in their heads. But they don't understand what the document is supposed to be and what it's supposed to look like.
I've read somewhere that, you know, one of the main sort of problems that a lot of budding scriptwriters have is that actually, you know, you can write 10, 15, 20 pages, but actually when it comes to the challenge of the log line of what your film is about, describing in, you know, about 20 words as to what that film is, if you can get that down to pat, the rest is going to come along quite easily. But I guess people don't sort of quite realize that that little log line, that synopsis of what the film is about, is so crucial to how the entire thing pans out.
It belies how well you understand your own work as well, right? Mm-hmm.
That's right. The synopsis is one of it, but what you have to have in mind while you're writing is the theme. And when scriptwriters talk about theme, they're not talking about things like the theme of family values or love or revenge. Those aren't themes. Themes, when you talk about it in terms of scriptwriting, it is basically what your film is saying. The message that you are trying to say to people who watch your movie. So that is your theme. So it's one sentence encapsulating what you want your movie to say. Your movie is basically an argument for something that you're trying to say. And if you don't have that in your head, then everything's going to fall apart because you don't know what you're saying. Mm.
And are there common tropes and pitfalls that Malaysian scriptwriters get into in the same way that I imagine any other sort of format? There are similar patterns that they keep repeating?
There are. One thing that I notice about Malaysian films, the films tend to be episodic in nature, in the sense that you watch the film and it's one sequence of scenes followed by another sequence of scenes, followed by another sequence of scenes. But there's no follow-through in terms of how the story is being pushed. So you have this sequence, but it's not pushing the story. As you go into the second sequence, the story is still at the point that it started with.
It's like a loose string of Canon commercials that have been strung together. Essentially.
So that even if the narrative arc is, you know, very solid and linear, some of the sequences that are put together independently just don't add up to the entire thing?
Yes, that's right. When you write a script, every scene is supposed to push the story and it's supposed to lead to the next scene and the next scene and the next scene. What happens sometimes is that the scriptwriter or the director, sometimes the scriptwriter is the director, will fall in love with certain scenes and will refuse to let it go because this is my favorite scene, and everybody will love it. It doesn't matter if it doesn't have anything to do with the story, it's fine. Right. I just want it to be there.
And that's where you need a very strong editor as well.
Yes. Right?
So kill your darlings.
Yeah, exactly, right? Kill your darlings. So, Bernice, talk to us about the demographics of the people who show up, or at least people who've showed up so far at the first weekend. I mean, are you seeing a pattern with regards to age? I mean, clearly there's a pattern with regards to gender. But...
I don't know. Well, we've had a lot of emails, you know, a lot of interest. There was an article that came out in the Star last week. So we've had a whole range of people applying who've expressed interest. We've had students, a lot of professionals, people who work in a lot of different industries who have this desire to tell a story. It's going to be very interesting to see who finally shows up.
Yeah.
We have had, like I said, a lot of interest. I think it's going to be very interesting. We've had a foreign woman attend the course last weekend. She's a German lady who works with a magazine here. Her husband is here building our trains for the MRT. So she saw the article and took the course and really loved it.
And are there opportunities? I mean, we spoke earlier before about, you know, when you're writing, there's just no money coming through. And are there opportunities or scholarships that are being afforded to writers so that, you know, it all makes sense to, you know, take a couple of months off and sort of start writing? Because I think in the realities of, you know, everyday life, it's quite difficult to put one and one together.
I believe that's what you call a pitch.
Yeah.
Well, the KL Writers Workshop also wants to have scholarships. You want people to fund scholarships. You want to create a writer's residency. We want to be able to have, you know, it becomes a one-stop center. In August, I have a literary agent coming through town. I don't think we've ever had a literary agent speak to our writers before. So it's going to be, we're looking at all aspects of the literary arts. Speaking of scholarships, we have a film producer, Zarul Albakri, of the upcoming film Spilt Gravy on Rice, would like to offer a scholarship for someone to take the screenwriting course. So if you're interested, please send us a one-page story idea or a treatment as soon as possible within the next few days, because our course starts on Saturday. So email it to klwritersworkshop@gmail.com and we will get back to you. So one scholarship, we already identified a student from Aswara who sent us a very interesting pitch idea, and he was like, yes, I want to fund this. So we are offering a second one.
We're going to continue talking about the KL Writers Workshop. Folks, for more information, head over to klwritersworkshop.com. Got some music for you, Your Ghost by Christian Hirsch and Michael Stipe, right here on BFM 89.9. It's the evening edition. You're with Uma and Ezra. In the studio with us is Bernice Charlie, founder and director of KL Writers Workshop, as well as Rafida Abdullah, who's a script writer. If you want to find out more about these workshops, head over to klwritersworkshop.com. You'll find all the information there. A couple of workshops already took place this past weekend. And this coming weekend, Write That Script, screenwriting with Rafida Abdullah, one of our guests in the studio. Rafida, you have a MA in screenwriting from Goldsmiths. You've got a lot of credits to your name: Golden Ginchu, Istanbul Akudatan, Kami Hysteria. What are some of the things that you've learned in terms of some of these works getting critical acclaim, some of these works getting commercial acclaim, and are you always constantly trying to find that sweet spot so that it sort of makes, you know, the best of both worlds?
Yes, that sweet spot is the holy grail, where you make something that's critically acclaimed as well as a hit at the box office.
And do you take personal responsibility towards the writing of it, or are there just other factors that, you know what, I can't control that? I mean, or do you place a lot of value yourself towards the writing?
For myself, one of the things I learned while doing my MA in scriptwriting was that in any given film, there are three scripts. The first is the one you write as a scriptwriter. The second is what the director shoots on location. And the third is what the editor edits in the editing room. Mm. So you only have control over the one. And that is the one that you have to put your best into, because you don't have control over the other two. For me, I write scripts to the best of my ability, but I also get input from my producer as well as my director. And sometimes, while workshopping it with the actors, I also get good ideas from them. So there are a lot of things that go into writing the script. But once the script is done, it's done. I don't interfere with the filmmaking process. There are a lot of factors that go into what makes a movie successful. And not the least of it is marketing. That is a huge part. It can't be denied. Mm-hmm. In Hollywood, for example, the budget for the movie is usually the same as the budget for marketing.
The marketing, yeah.
Which is something we don't have here. We just don't have the money. We don't have that kind of money. So in that sense, a lot of good films can fall by the wayside. That is why also a lot of producers try to drive the budget for the film lower and ever lower, so that they have more money to push
to
into marketing.
Sell the film.
So knowing all these things, I try not to take it personally if my movies don't do well. At the same time, it still hurts.
And then you just blame the editor and director, lah.
And so that's interesting. I mean, you know, when you're writing these, I mean, you're acknowledging that there are three different versions of the same story. Mm. And in that regard, do screenwriters overcompensate on that first draft so that everything is there that needs to be there? And by the time it goes through all the other filters of being on production and through the editing room, that you'll still feel safe as a writer that the story is somewhat intact?
As a scriptwriter, you try to put down everything that you think should be on screen. That includes things like describing how the person walks, if it's important, describing what the space looks like, if that's important. You try to write down everything that is significant in your script, but that doesn't mean that the director's not free to change it. Let's say they find a location. It's great, the director loves it, but it's not the way you described it. It's his call. It's his prerogative whether he wants to use that location or not. So you can specify everything in your script. You can even specify camera movements, etc. Although that's not your job. That's really not your job. And a lot of directors and directors of photography sometimes take offense when you do that. So try not to. Just describe what you see in your head. And once you've done that, and you've written your script, a few weeks later you read it, and it's still clear, everything that you wanted to be there is there, then you just have to let it go.
Well, now I'm just curious about what the script for Mad Max was like, because was it just four pages of words and then just everything was describing how somebody jumps off another car or something?
The descriptions are actually really important.
Yeah, I bet.
Cirque du Soleil here, right? If you're interested in Rafida's writing process, you can download the podcast. She was on a show with us about a year and a half, 2 years ago, about Istanbul Akudatan.
Yes, that's right.
With Bernice's brother, Bernard Chorley, who was the director of that. It's all very incestuous. I mean,
and this does not mean that you should not attend the workshop happening this weekend.
No, no, don't just listen to the podcast. You only learn so much. Bernice, you are doing a workshop on the author's voice. I don't think that is something a lot of people even think about, or a lot of young writers even think about, mm-hmm. When they pick up a pen or start on a keyboard somewhere. How important is that voice? I mean, you've been to a lot of residencies yourself. You were recently in Iowa, also in Alaska. How important, how much emphasis do they put on that voice?
I think when you start as a writer, I started in poetry because I just loved poetry. And I think that sort of is the foundation, the basis of the way you write. That sense of rhythm, the sense of there has to be meter, assonance, repetition, that sort of thing. That was very, very useful for me as a writer, because then I went into creative nonfiction and now fiction. I think it's important to discover what your strengths are, but at the same time, to try different genres. So in my course, Finding the Author's Voice, we will start with a personal monologue, which is creative nonfiction. And I think it's important for writers to start with themselves, to figure out what is my voice as a writer, what am I saying differently that is distinct from someone else's. Mm-hmm. So we start with that, and so it becomes very personal, and I've taught this course for many years. It becomes very cathartic, so I think you sort of get rid of stuff that you need to say, and then you develop a piece that is a standalone personal monologue. A lot of great we're referring to Hollywood, great Hollywood actors started as comedians. Spalding Gray, for example, Eddie Murphy, they all did stand-up, you know, routines. And it essentially is a form of the personal monologue. So we start with that, and then we move on to poetry, and then we end with short fiction. So
very nice.
In 10 weeks, you are actually, you have a mini writing portfolio at the end. You have a personal monologue, you have a collection of poems, and a short story.
Well, there's a lot to look forward to, Bernice. And a final plug, of course, I'm sending a lot of our listeners to klwritersworkshop.com to find out more information. Once again, you also have the scholarship that you mentioned earlier as well. Mm-hmm. Just a recap on that.
Yes, film producer Zarul Abbakri is offering a scholarship for Write That Script. And if you're interested, please send us a one-page treatment or story idea to klwritersworkshop@gmail.com within the next few days, and we'll get back to you.
All right, folks, in the studio with us has been Rafida Abdullah, scriptwriter, as well as the founder and director of KL Writers Workshop, Bernice Chorley. For more information for these workshops, head over to klwritersworkshop.com. It's happening this weekend. Of course, it goes on for quite some time in the next few months. So certainly stay tuned and I guess watch that space.
Watch the space, yeah, there'll be lots.
Absolutely. If you missed any part of this program, you can download the podcast at www.bfm.my. Just a quick heads up on some of the programming happening after the 7 o'clock news. Some BBC programming, actually. It's Hard Talk, and we have Stephen Sacco speaking to Julia Gillard, who made history 5 years ago when she became Australia's first female Prime Minister.
There will be no kissing.
There will be no kissing in that episode. Having broken through Australia's ultimate glass ceiling, he finds out what happened to her political career and how it ended in deep disappointment. So that's happening after the 7 o'clock news. We've got some music for you. My Baby Drives by Justin Towns Earl, right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.